All right, today is Friday, March 15th, 2015, and I am interviewing Lawrence Abdullah at the main branch of the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library. Mr. Abdullah was born on April 13th, 1954, and is 61 years old. My name is Ann Lacey, and I'm a librarian here at the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library, and today we'll be talking about Mr. Abdullah's life, Kansas City, boxing, and community volunteering. So tell me how long you have lived in Kansas City, Kansas.
I've lived here. I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. After that, I was raised and grew up in Kansas City, Kansas, on the Kansas side. My parents were teachers. When I graduated in 1972, I had several scholarships that awarded me an opportunity to move to Michigan. I attended Kettering University, it's now called Kettering University, in Flint, Michigan. And after that graduation, I was offered three job offers. One was Kansas City, one was Oklahoma City, and one was GM headquarters in Detroit, or Warren, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. I decided to take the most prestigious opportunity, which was the GM headquarters in Warren, Michigan, and that opened a whole new spectrum of life for me.
Yeah.
And my job title was Senior Specifications Analyst, which entailed receiving engineering documents and drawings and specifications, analyzing all this information. It was all piled on my desk. I would analyze it and decipher it into what is more commonly known as an instruction sheet. The best parallel to that would be like your model car kit, where there's a little instruction sheet inside. I was doing the same thing on a computer, and I would send this computer instruction sheet to assembly plants all over the country. And the assembly supervisors would review these documents, and this would tell them how to assemble the automobile. We were also their liaison as far as communicating with them, explaining to them any questions they had regarding that assembly process. Mm-hmm. And my degree was in industrial administration, so I had a background of both industrial engineering and business administration. So I was also the liaison between engineers and supervisors or administrators, that if they needed layman terms of engineering detail, I would translate it for them, basically. So I was also a speechwriter for some supervisors. Mm-hmm. to actually translate complicated questions into layman's terms.
You also mentioned working as a Senate page. You've had a pretty diverse career. Can you tell me a little bit about that too?
The Senate page started out of high school, and a lot of that opportunity was right here in Kansas. When I was in high school, the counselor, Chuck Viney, recognized that I had some leadership talents and recommended that I would be one of several students. There's 20 students throughout the country that were selected for that opportunity. I first started as a state page, Senate page for Haley. The senator's son now is a state senator, but I was actually working for his dad. From that relationship, Senator Dole, I had a chance to work with Senator Dole also as a Senate page. I was invited to the White House.
Tell me about that, your trip to the White
House.
That
was, it was an annual event known as the National Prayer Breakfast. And also This particular year was unique because the 18-year-old vote was recently passed into validation. So all 18-year-olds, especially with those 18-year-olds going to Vietnam and fighting in the war, they were given the right to vote as well. So this was a significant year for the election. The young people became a significant source of campaigning.
You were being heavily recruited.
And all 20 students were invited to Washington, D.C., and we were also taken on tour of the United Nations. We went to New York, the United Nations. We traveled to Philadelphia, all of the historical sites there, as well as having breakfast with the president. It was called a National Prayer Breakfast. This was a prestigious opportunity. President Nixon was the president at the time. It was a prestigious opportunity to represent the country as well as our state and our youth. So after returning from that trip, we were invited to several community churches, schools to talk about our experience and share that with our colleagues. But we also were encouraging the emphasis on voting.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And that I use that also on my resume for applying for scholarships. When I applied for scholarships to various colleges, that was one of the key assets on my resume.
And this is when you were applying to Kettering and...
Kettering. I received scholarships. K-State was one, Wichita State. There's a college in Boston, Baker University. The emphasis on grades was very important for my parents. They said, we know you love sports, but you need to keep your grades up as well. And one of the scholarship offers came from Wichita State. I had a chance to visit Wichita State on the invitation of one of my alumni, high school alumni, and he was on the football team. But what I discovered is that after an injury, his scholarship was in jeopardy. He had a knee injury, so his scholarship was in jeopardy. And I started to look at his situation and say, hey, the same thing could happen to me. So I took, you know, grades more seriously. I also was thinking of becoming a medical doctor. So I took a few pre-med courses. There was Bethany Hospital, and I was a volunteer at Bethany. And that gave me an insight on the careers of, I worked in bacteriology and also worked in the emergency room at Bethany Medical Center. And I used some of that experience as well as I was pursuing a scholarship with Wichita State because they had a nice medical program.
So how did you decide on engineering?
The decision to go engineering was a result of a full scholarship being offered by...
Pretty good incentive.
Not only that, not only was it a full scholarship, they also guaranteed, they said, if you graduate from our school, we guarantee you'll have a good job when you when you complete. And they were correct, because after graduation, I received three job offers, very good job offers.
So you mentioned always having an interest in sports. What sports did you play growing up?
Like Little League football. I was active in Little League football. I was in track and field. I set a few records in track and field. But my love was for football. And when during high school, All my coaches were teachers as well. So my chemistry teacher was a tennis coach. My history teacher was football coach. My English teacher was track and field coach. My algebra teacher was a track and field and football coach. And they kind of focused my athletics on the results of gymnastics performance and or the physical ed performance. So students that excelled in certain sports and physical ed were kind of steered towards that particular sport. So I was kind of steered towards track and field and distance. I was also a good distance runner.
And tell me, what high school did you go to?
It was Wyandotte High School. And the most popular kid in our generation was Jim Ryan from Wichita East, who back then set the 4-minute mile. He broke the 4-minute mile barrier, and that was the greatest thing, you know, because we were, one of our coaches was Wichita East. One of our coaches was actually a running mate of Jim Ryan, and his workouts were just as tough. He would actually drive us to Lawrence, Kansas, and we would run all the way back to Wyandotte. You know, we'd take the back road and run all the way back to Wyandotte. So that was a pretty challenging experience. But it kind of geared us towards college, too. Because what I found out in college, my first freshman year in college, I found out that Canadian students have an extra year of high school. So they're already prepped for college. So that our biggest challenge was coming from the north, from Canadian students. So they had an advantage.
They're better prepared.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my students was from the Missouri side of Kansas City. One of my classmates was from the Missouri side of Kansas City. And she was furious over she could immediately see the difference between the academics of Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, and Canada, as, you know, she struggled that first freshman year, primarily because just the preparation of the challenge. Myself, I didn't have that much difficulty because of the pre-med courses I had taken, which kind of helped prepare me for the challenge. But it was just an indication that it goes beyond sports. Challenge goes beyond sports.
Yeah.
And this school was, a lot of the students were the tops in their high school. They were in the top ranked in their high school. So some of them couldn't deal with that challenge. Some of them, for example, for the first time, maybe they were receiving a failing grade, and psychologically some of them weren't prepared for it. So that was one of the unique things. That's where sports, as far as the toughness, the mental toughness, played a significance with the academic part.
Well, that's a great segue into the next question. I know you're a boxing coach now, so tell me how you got started with that.
The boxing resulted from growing up. When I grew up, my mom had me enrolled in karate for self-defense primarily. My style of karate was Shito Ryu, which is a Japanese style. It's very unique. It's not too popular because Taekwondo is a more popular
better known.
Yeah, it was a more popular style of karate and Kung Fu, Bruce Lee. That was the year that all those movies and the superstar Bruce Lee was popular back then. So a lot of the focus was on that sport. And I carried that through my years. In college, that was, we had competition in martial arts. Our school was very much focused on academics, but we did have a few intramural sports and that was one of them that that I excelled in. And I was always being challenged because my style of karate was uniquely different from many of the other students. So I would always find them challenging me. You know, so. After I finished college, I took the job at General Motors headquarters, and that lasted a few years. I moved to Kansas City on a transfer, worked in Kansas City at the Fairfax Assembly Plant. I was a quality engineer there, had a chance to do test drives with automobiles. Kansas City was unique because they brought all of the lemons, all of the troubled vehicles that GM was having a problem with were brought to here to Kansas City. And they had a special team of assembly plant personnel, engineers from Rochester Carburetor, the design engineers. We were all brought here to Kansas City to discuss this problem with the automobile. And it was primarily engine hesitations. And our job was to test drive these cars from Kansas City to Pikes Peak in Colorado.
That sounds like a great job.
We drove those cars. Yeah, some engineers actually brought their skis with them, you know, so they could do that in the off time. Mm-hmm. But the challenge was that we had to come back with results. We had to do presentations. And the objective here was to stop the finger pointing. General Motors was tired of engineers blaming assembly plants and assembly plants blaming Rochester Carburetor, and everyone was pointing the finger. And the management wanted the finger pointing to stop. They wanted results. And that's why they brought us all together. So as a team, we drove from Kansas City to Pikes Peak. And what was unique about this experience is while we were in Colorado on the mountain, we were staying at a hotel, and our competition was there. There was a Japanese automaker, and they were doing a special experiment on one of their vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it caught our attention. Yeah. So we all went out and started taking pictures of the, you know, they were doing a special radiator test, and they had all of this devices hooked to the radiator that they had the hood up and all these devices. So one of our team members went out and took pictures of it. Then here comes the Japanese engineers. They came out of their hotel room and said, "Hey, what are you doing? No, you can't take pictures." You know, so then there was this confrontation. Said, "Hey, no, you can't tell us what to do. This is America. We can take photos of whatever we see." And so it was unique. It was a unique confrontation because if you know the history of the automotive industry, Japan did the same thing to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Japan came to one of the assembly plants and they had measuring devices on their cameras and they took pictures of the devices in the assembly plant. So it was just a reversal of what we had experienced.
So I know that you were a member of the 1996 Olympic staff in Atlanta. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay. That resulted from me transferring to Kansas City, and I designed some computer programs for GM, which allowed me to take an early retirement. At age 37, I took an early retirement and moved to Atlanta. And it was in Atlanta where the apartment complex where I stayed, there was a confrontation between kids. And I broke up that confrontation. And it was one kid bullying another kid, a 13-year-old bullying a 9-year-old. And I came to the rescue of the 9-year-old. I learned that the 13-year-old, his nickname was Gang Boy, was trying to start a gang in the neighborhood. And all his followers, which were younger, were rallying behind him because of his superiority over the rest of the neighborhood. And they would do ornery things. For example, they would go in the laundry room, take everyone's clothes out of the washers and dryers and pile them in one big pile just to irritate the residents. Things like that. Just ornery little things that they would do. And I would catch wind of this, and we had a courtyard in our apartment complex. We had a courtyard where these kids would always get together, and then there would be this confrontation. I realized that this young man, if I taught him how to defend himself, maybe a lot of this would dissipate and no longer be a problem. And that's exactly what I did. I taught him how to defend himself. One day there was a confrontation. The 9-year-old was challenged by the 13-year-old. The 13-year-old, they were in a confrontation. The 13-year-old started crying, and next thing you know, all the other kids realized that Gang Boy was not as tough as he had made out to be. That dissolved a lot of the gang problem after that. And that one 9-year-old became so popular that we had several, like the East Point Police, College Park and East Point Police Department sponsored him in what was known as Police Athletic League Championship. And so I was able to get the police department and several other community groups behind us to support our boxing program. So that was the beginning of that. I had a daughter, Laura, that was 7, and she was involved in the program as well. When she turned 8, that was the first thing she wanted to do was join USA Boxing. Yeah. Back then, girls were not really recognized, so she became one of the first females to actually be recognized by USA Boxing, which was a pioneer for our sport. Because as you know, in 1904 in St. Louis, they took boxing out of the Olympics for women, but they brought it back in London in 2012. Mm-hmm. And this happened to be the year that Clarissa Shields, Flint, Michigan, my college alumni city, she won the gold medal in boxing. Clarissa Shields won the gold medal, and Marlon Esparza from Texas won the bronze. And the women were the only one to bring medals to the U.S. that year, which saved face for the U.S. Yeah. It brought the pride back into our country. So that's how my boxing started.
Yeah.
And Buddy Davis, the same, he was president of the Georgia Amateur Boxing Association. He's the same person that brought Evander Holyfield into boxing. Evander was on the Olympic team in Korea. He had a bad experience with the judging, the decision, which didn't go his way, so he didn't win a gold medal as he may have hoped. But when he turned professional, rather than forgetting about his community, he remembered the community. So a lot of his success he brought back to the community in the form of a big donation, which ended up being an abandoned high school gym on the west end of Atlanta that was turned into was known as Holyfield Arena. They renamed it Holyfield Arena. They remodeled it with 2 boxing gyms, basketball court, after school learning center, and a weight room. And during the 96 Olympics, that became the home of the U.S. Olympic team. They used that same building to train because of the convenience, because it was right on the MARTA line, the subway line. So it was a convenient travel point for the athletes during that time.
So how did you get involved with the gym in Kansas City?
After the Olympics, I moved back to Kansas City, primarily because my parents, their health was not good, and it was primarily for family reasons is why I moved back. And I was not familiar with the boxing till I paid a visit to Eastside Gym, which was at Truman Road in Prospect. And immediately they recognized that I would be a fantastic coach, and they invited me to start training there. So I became one of their assistant coaches. I was an assistant coach, and I worked up to ended up being their head coach. And I was there till closing. I call it the year in which we had the Fabulous Eight. We had eight Golden Gloves champions come out of the gym. And that particular year, we had two female champions and six male regional champions. And during that Olympic, during that Golden Gloves year, that was a year where my appendix busted during the preliminaries of the event. And I ended up having to be in the hospital, in an emergency room. I almost died from it because I didn't realize my appendix had busted. So I rushed to the emergency. So I didn't get a chance to finish the tournament because I was in the hospital. But my assistant coaches, which were two gentlemen that the rest of the community had given up on. These were two older gentlemen that I had recruited as coaches. They were in their like 70s. And one was Howard Griffith, and the other was Al Murray. They were kind of passed over because of their age. You know, no one took them serious, but I did. I took them serious because I said, this is where you learn from. A lot of the old time coaches, they teach you all of those, just like home remedies, they have all of the old knowledge, which they carried on the team while I was in the hospital. And I ended up receiving an award that year. We received an award for our accomplishments. And the most satisfying thing about that was the team effort. The mere fact that with me gone, they were still able to carry on the mission.
Yeah, sounds like you had a great team. So you mentioned growing up in a very interesting neighborhood here in Kansas City, Kansas. Tell me, what neighborhood was that? And tell me a little bit about it.
It was called Brentwood Hills. And what was unique about it is it was an African-American neighborhood, but it was the pride of African-America because a lot of the African-American professionals back in the 1950s that were, these were teachers, doctors, dentists, lawyers. They wanted to establish pride where they didn't want it to look like, well, the minorities are moving into a neighborhood, taking over that neighborhood. No, this is something that was started from scratch. We were here first. We built it from the ground up. So that was what was unique about it. And that was part of the pride of it, is that it was built from scratch by African American. And back in that time, there were other businesses that they tried to build from, originate from scratch. For example, my parents were also involved with, I think it was called American Woodman's Insurance. It was an insurance company that was built by African Americans, just like the bank. For example, the Douglas Bank in Atlanta. One thing I didn't mention is that in Atlanta, I became one of the founding shareholders of Capital City Bank in Atlanta, which was started the same way, with that same concept of businessmen getting together and trying to create something from scratch. Myself, being popular with the boxing, we were able to invest some of our money into George Andrews was the gentleman's name. George Andrews had this dream of starting a bank in Atlanta, and a lot of people didn't take him serious because he went from business to business trying to get his idea off the ground, sort of like Kickstarter. And he would ask for a minimum investment of $500. That's all he would ask for. And I was one of the first to invest in that. And it started a bandwagon of more people getting involved. And today that bank, they have a branch in the Hartsfield Atlanta Airport. And that branch helped the bank expand. So now it's a statewide bank. Yeah. And it's sort of my pride. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to do what Holyfield did as far as creating a gym, but I was able to establish that pride with that banking institution, being a founding shareholder in that bank. So that's...
Tell me about some of your volunteer work here in the Kansas City, Kansas community.
Okay, like I said, in high school, I was a volunteer with Bethany Medical School, Bethany Medical. And the boxing, for example, when I came back to Kansas City in 1997 after the Olympics, when I came back, a lot of my coaching time was volunteer. A lot of the USA Boxing, a lot of the coaches volunteered their time and effort. And we were fortunate that we had a few professional athletes that donated the money that we needed to pay for our registration and pay for our trips. And after the Eastside Gym closed down, I volunteered as a coach at the Kansas City, Missouri Powell Gym. Leon Esteban was the head coach. So a lot of the time I spent there was also volunteer coaching. And our reward for our volunteer time was the results of our boxers winning titles and championships and getting recognition. And from KC Powell Gym, I received an offer from the Guadalupe Boxing Club, which was located on the west side of Kansas City, Missouri. What was unique about Guadalupe is the building, the Guadalupe Center, which had government funds. It was a government-funded program. Guadalupe Center, boxing was just a small part of their program. So the basement level of our Guadalupe Center was the boxing. The main level was English as a second language, and the upper level was a Latin dance group. So all three of these activities went on in the same building. This was the gym where we received our historical recognition, because we had two boxers that came out of the Guadalupe program that ended up in the Olympic trials. We had Chad Aquino that fought in the Eastern Olympic trials, and Chad Aquino later became a Golden Gloves national champion. Then we had Doug Allen, which competed in the Western Olympic Trials. I'm talking the year 2004 Olympic Trials. So in 2004 we had those two boxers from my gym. Mm-hmm. Guadalupe was also The year that I became the regional, because I had the most champions, USA Boxing awarded me with the title as the Heartland Regional Coach. And I had some popular talent like Brandon Rios, who later became a world champion, and Marcus Oliveras, who also became a world champion in professional boxing. And they're real popular boxers now in professional boxing, in world championship. So that was probably another great year for boxing. With 9/11, Guadalupe lost, like a lot of the other youth programs, they lost their funding. They lost their city funding because of the 9/11 incident. And I continued, without being paid as a paid coach, I continued as a volunteer coach with Guadalupe. So it wasn't about the money, it was about the kids. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have left, but I stayed and we continued the program. Eventually, Guadalupe lost its lease when it took a chance on moving, and it lost its lease, and then the program died from there. And that's how I ended up on the Kansas side with Community Boxing and Fitness. Greg Suddington was not only a coach, but he was a former Golden Gloves national champion. He was also a minister, and he was also a former professional boxer. He fought for Don King, believe it or not, as a professional boxer. But he had the same vision that Evander Holyfield had as far as giving back to his community. So Greg Suddington, along with Preston Thomas, another minister, former boxer who fought Muhammad Ali as an amateur, these two ministers and a few other community leaders got together and formed what is now known as Community Boxing. And that's the gym where I'm a volunteer coach now, is Community Boxing and Fitness. Mm-hmm. So besides the boxing, we're also involved with the volunteer time in we do for Kansas Public Schools. We do what's called health fairs. We attend the health fairs every 2 weeks, where we go into the high schools, the middle schools, and we demonstrate how boxing is good for fitness and exercise. It also gives us a chance to tell a little bit about my story as far as the focus on education being significant, as well as mm-hmm. The sports training, where both play into your future, not just sports, but academics plays a part. And it goes beyond just the learning aspect. Is just a lesson in life, because I explained to them, I said, yes, you may become a professional athlete, you may become successful, but just like taking your car to an auto mechanic, you know, you have to have the knowledge to know whether that mechanic can be trusted or not. Just like when you're dealing with a sports manager or an attorney, you need the knowledge to know whether, or buying a house or a loan or a bank transaction, that contract, you need to understand it. You need to have your own self independence, self-sufficiency, to know whether you can handle it on your own, because you may be on your own.
Yeah.
You know, you may be in a situation where you can't depend on the coach or the trainer or the manager to be in your best interest. So that's why the education is important. And I explained that to them. I explained some of the experiences that I've had, mm-hmm. where I've had boxers that they became professional too early. They were paid with tickets instead of money. I've had boxers that actually competed, and after the fight, they said, hey, I thought I was going to get paid. And they didn't realize that their payment was those free tickets. Mm-hmm. Those tickets was another manipulation tool that a promoter would use in order to entice them to compete, not realizing that they not only they had to market themselves, they had to sell, you know, they had to sell themselves to the public. You know, not only were they training and competing, but they were also having to market their own revenue. And these are things that we try to convey to these young kids, because it's not just boxing, it's like music, other activities that they take for granted are going to make them successful, but without the education, it just won't happen.
Well, it sounds like a great message that you're sharing with them, that their schoolwork is just as important as their fitness and physical training. Well, you've really had some, it's been great to hear about the successes you've had in your career and the things you're doing for your community, and I thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us today.
Okay, thank you.